You're listening to UK Health Radio, where health means more than the absence of illness. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. I'm Hillary Burns, and each week we explore honest conversations about life, health, and whole person well-being through real stories of resilience, healing, and human connection. This is the Getting Real with Hillary show on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. Her name is Desiree Lim. She's an award-winning Canadian filmmaker, a multilingual cultural hybrid growing up in Malaysia and Japan. Fluent in English, Japanese, Mandarin, Cantonese, and Malay, Desiree continues to transcend geographical and cultural borders to breathe life and give voice to the unique and original stories she has to tell through film while sharing her healing gifts with the world. And she is presently in Canada. And welcome, Desiree.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Hillary. It's so good to be here.
Yes, you're welcome. Now, can I just ask you, when I was saying she, was that wrong?
Oh, no, it's she, they, you know, whatever you want to call, you know, I'm very gender fluid that way.
Okay. All right, good. All right. As I was saying it, I was like, I don't know if that's correct. Okay, great. All right. So why don't you give us, you've had such an amazing background. Why don't you tell us a little bit about growing up and how you got to where you are now?
Yeah. So I've been, you know, born and raised in Malaysia, and then after high school, I went to Japan to pursue my university education, and I've always had a very unique and interesting deep connection with Japan. When I was a teenager, I picked up, started to train, actually be trained in Kendo, which is Japanese fencing, a form of martial arts that maybe not a lot of people know about. You know, it's not as commonly known as karate or, you know, judo, you know. So kendo is the way of the sword. So, and the reason, I mean, there are quite a few reasons why I became fascinated, you know, with this sport. You know, first of all, I've grown up to be a, you know, Luke Skywalker wannabe, a big, you know, Star Wars fan. And then I came across this Japanese comic that features this little boy who got trained in kendo, and you know, it's about his growing pains. And so I just completely fell in love with this character and then tried to find a way to learn this myself in Malaysia. And this was back in the late 80s. And nobody was doing that, you know, back in Malaysia. But my dad, you know, finally found a class that was the only one in Malaysia, which was at the Japanese embassy. So he found out from the Japanese embassy where the class is. So long story short, I started training and then started to go to Japan, you know, every summer to train. And that's how I kind of fell in love with Japan and decided to pursue my education there. And then went to study journalism and started my career as a TV director, producer, you know, at one of the biggest networks in Japan, which is the Asahi network. And also went on to work in NHK as well, which is Japan's public broadcaster, you know, something like BBC. Right. Of Japan. So my career started in documentaries and, you know, current affairs. So you can say that my passion in filmmaking has always been telling real stories, which is very relevant to your show. You know, it's always about bringing the stories of the new real people, bringing the voices of the real people to the world, to help to, you know, bring change to the world, bring discussion to the world, you know, begin a dialogue, you know, to make the world a better place. So that's where I've always started as a journalist. And then later on, you know, when I had to go on a journey of discovery of my own sexuality. And this is when I was in, I think, my sophomore year in university that I came out to myself. And then had to find the LGBT community in Japan. And back in those days, this is before, you know, before the age of internet. So, you know, it was during those days where you actually had to call somebody up on the phone to join a group, you know, or a meetup. So those were the days when there was hardly a community. So I was very much part of that early, I would say, generation of LGBT people in Japan who kind of like started the movement, you know, in Japan. And I found my posse, you know, and then started to make films as an underground filmmaker, because I wasn't out, you know, to the world at large. I was out in school, but not like when I started to work in the corporate world. I was completely in the closet, you know, because, you know, the media was not projecting LGBT people in a positive way, including the, you know, TV station that I worked in. And I didn't feel safe, you know, being honest about who I am. So as kind of, I was kind of living a double life, you know. I was like a corporate, you know, film producer, director, and then at night, you know, kind of like Batman, you know, I turned into the underground filmmaker making films about, you know, the gay and lesbian world, you know. And so that continued for a few years until I felt like, okay, you know, I really need to live my own truth. And that's when I quit my job, my corporate job, and became a freelance independent filmmaker. And then, you know, and then continued to make films. And so, you know, my first feature length film, if you will, you know, traveled the LGBT film festival circuit. And so I was starting this career as a independent queer filmmaker. And it was really, really inspired, you know, going to these different film festivals in the world and seeing how audiences are moved and touched, you know, by a story from Japan. And I really saw the power of filmmaking, of how, you know, really transcend cultures and you know, and countries.
Were your LGBT films played at regular film festivals, or were there
LGBT film festivals?
So, okay.
Yeah. So I was a lot of them in the US, like San Francisco, New York, you know, Miami, and then also in Europe, you know, as well as in other Asian countries like Korea and Taiwan, and, you know, of course, Japan itself. So I was traveling around with my films, and I was really inspired by
what language was it in?
In Japanese.
So it had subtitles?
Subtitles, yes.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. So that's when I felt really, really inspired, you know, to see, you know, that a film can really transcend language and, you know, and culture and countries. And I experienced that firsthand myself, right? So I was really inspired to continue on this trajectory, this career. And then I felt like I kind of hit the, you know, the glass ceiling in Japan, you know, being a queer and a woman, you know, and a foreigner in a country, in the country back then, and decided that, okay, you know what, I'm gonna move to a greener field, if you will, and came to Canada. But then in Canada, you know, I really had to, you know, start off from scratch again, because nobody knew me here. And also my career has all, you know, has been in Japan. So I didn't have anything on my resume that, that shows that I have any, you know, work experience in Canada. And it was tough, you know, I couldn't find work literally, you know, because I don't have that background, even though I'm fluent in English and, you know, and I have years of experience under my belt. But yeah, so it's the typical immigrant story. You know, I literally couldn't find work and had to start from scratch again.
For how long? How long?
Oh, wow. It took me like maybe at least 5 years to kind of build back to where I was, you know, close to where I was, you know.
And what did you do in the meantime? How did you survive?
Just doing whatever work that came along, you know. I mean, no, at first it wasn't related to film, you know. There are some jobs that I do not related to film. But as I started to make connections and, you know, getting to know more people, I was starting to get more work in film. And also, and at the time, you know, Canada was introducing a lot of initiatives, helping people of a color and also minority to receive grants to make films and giving us opportunities to get our work seen on TV networks, you know.
Wow.
And what have you. So I really was I feel lucky to have been able to be part of those programs, because basically those programs also help you connect with the industry, so that mm-hmm. people get to know you and then right. you know, grow your connections. So I'm very grateful to Canada in many ways. You know, it is really a very inclusive country, you know, in many ways, and provides a lot of opportunities for people who are new to the country. And so long story short, you know, I was actually on the verge of directing, producing like my biggest film at the time to you know, as sort of like my next phase of my career, which is to produce a feature film in English, you know, in North America. And unfortunately, it's actually not unfortunately anymore, because I know everything happens for a reason. But back then it was unfortunately, because my whole world came crashing, you know, down on me, you know, left, right, and center, when that film completely fell apart financially and you know, and also with relationships and all that. And so I went into a very deep personal crisis, if you will. And that was actually, in retrospect, you know, it's actually my spiritual awakening.
Mm.
It was an opportunity for spiritual awakening. And, you know,
How old were you at the time?
I just barely turned 30, I think.
Okay.
You know, back yeah. then. Yeah. 30. Yeah. I think mid 30s, something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was devastating. You know, it was my biggest project, and there was a lot of stakes, you know, and quite a lot of money, you know, six figure, you know, money that I, you know, that was, going down the pipes, you know. Well, no, it's my investors. Yeah. Right? So again, right. So,
yeah.
I was going through this crisis, and it was around this time actually that I met my teacher, Dr. Master Shah.
Mm.
Right. And the way I met him was also very interesting. It's a very long story, but I won't, you know, go into that. But ultimately, you know, I had an opportunity to learn about him through a book that I read, I think about a year prior, yeah, meeting him, and then also watching a documentary about him, and so one thing led to another, and I can see how this was all divine, you know, orchestrated, I think it was maybe 2 years after I read the book, one of my friends, her mom became like critically ill and was in, you know, ICU. And this was during that time of my spiritual crisis, if you will. Mm-hmm. It hasn't collapsed at that point.
Right.
Hasn't collapsed at that point, but it was kind of prior to that collapse that this all started to fall into place. And so this mother of my friend was in ICU, you know, with some kind of really strange, you know, condition, a blood infection that the doctors didn't know what to do about. And she was really like fading away. And then it was around this time that I saw a big ad in the local paper that this Dr. Shah is in town. And I remembered him and I thought, wow, you know, maybe we can go to him and maybe he can, you know, help in some way, you know. So I told this friend of mine and we went to one of his free healing sessions. And this friend of mine, you know, she's very gifted spiritually, so she can actually see spiritual images, you know, third eye you might have heard of. And she saw what was going on when Dr. Shah was offering, you know, the healings, and she really felt that he was the real deal. And
what did she see? Did she tell you what she could see?
She did, but I'm not sure if this is the right place to talk about it. You know, just spiritual images of what you would see, you know, when some, you know, healing is taking place, the light, dark, you know, things like that. And so she felt, you know, that this is real. And right away, you know, had Dr. Shah send some remote healing to her mother in the ICU. So and then she went off her way to see, you know, to take care of the mom. And I just you know, stayed back, you know, through the week where, you know, Dr. Shah was having other workshops about healing and about spiritual development. Mm-hmm. And then when he asked, like, okay, you know, who in this audience would like to become a healer? And I just, you know, before my mind, you know, could even think of my hand just shot up. And the rest is history. So I became trained by Dr. Shah as a healer. And I am now today a master teacher and healer trained by Master Shah. Very honored to be his student. And from about 6 years ago, so I've been a student of Dr. Shah for now over 13 years now.
Oh, can I just ask, yeah? What happened to the mother?
Oh, yes, the mother, of course.
I'm like, what? Wait, bring go back. I didn't want to interrupt you, but I wanted to know. Yeah.
Sorry, I circled back to that. Yes, so the mother got discharged from ICU and she was fine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like that day? Like that day?
No, not that day. I think maybe a couple of weeks later. Oh. So I didn't become a healer because of that, you know.
Oh, but
when yeah. she
I was just wondering what happened here. Yeah, okay, good. Sorry. Right. And now I think we could take our commercial break, and then when we come back, we'll get the rest of the story. All right.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
The station that makes you feel good.
All right. When you put your hand up, did you like go see him after? Did like how did that all?
No. He basically to become a Tao hands healer. That was the first sort of like entry level of becoming trained in Dr. Sha's modality, which he founded this modality called Soul Mind Body Medicine. So it's quantum healing that's healing at the level of the soul. And the soul, and he later on, you know, was able to explain this today, as quantum science, which he calls Tao science. And so the healing takes place at the level of the soul, and in quantum science, the soul is actually the warehouse of information, which is like the quantum field of the information that we carry. So when we're doing the healing, we're transforming the information that's in your field, you know, in the field of your being, you know. So every one of us has a field, has a soul, and that soul carries all kinds of information that has traveled with us. If you believe in lifetimes, for lifetimes. So the soul is the field or the consciousness that continues to evolve and grow through different lifetimes. And whatever information that we have created continues to live with us in this field from lifetime after lifetime. So it was becoming a Tao hands healer. And what Dr. Sha does is that he can transmit this hands, this, you know, invisible, you know, healing hands to your hand that will live with you in your field and that you can activate to send healing frequencies to others. So it's, if you've heard of Reiki, you know, it's something similar to that. You're connecting to the universal consciousness or field, or you know,
But you had to train with him. He didn't just go, "Give me your hands, boom, now you can do it."
No. You go through a workshop that will train you how to actually use it. And so, I'll share an anecdote with you about my experience with the hands and how I kind of like, first of all, I stumbled on this path, and I never would ever, you know, dream of. If you asked me 10 years ago or 20 years ago, would I ever envision myself being in the position that I am? I would probably say that you're crazy. Because I never thought I would become a healer or be making the films that I'm making today, you know, about healing. So going back to my crisis, when that crisis happened, everything fell apart. And that was when I had to kind of like start to awaken to my true calling, which is still being a filmmaker, but perhaps no longer making films that I thought I would be making. And it wasn't an easy awakening process because my ego, my mind were, you know, kicking and screaming all the way.
You didn't want to be a healer, or you want?
No. I wanted to be a filmmaker that was not making the films that I wanted to make.
Okay.
Right? Because I was on a trajectory of becoming a queer filmmaker, telling stories about, you know, you know, the queer condition or stories. Yeah. And that was my dream, you know, to bring that, you know, to the world. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I had to, you know, stop and pause and realize that that's not what I'm, you know, supposed to be doing in this lifetime. Right. So that was, it was very much, like an ego mind thing.
How did you know? You just had the feeling of this is the way I'm supposed to go. Like, do you know what I mean? you wanted to do these films, you know, about the queer, that. And then what was the struggle? Like, you were feeling called to go this other direction?
So being trained by Dr. Shah, my spiritual channel started to open, meaning that I can communicate with my higher self. Mm-hmm. If you believe in God, you know, I could start communicating with God and the heavenly beings, mm-hmm. right? But what I learned from my spiritual crisis, you know, and I did go into what, you know, some people may know, especially if you come from a Christian background, dark night of the soul. Mm. I was quite lost for quite a few years, trying to figure out, you know, well, what am I supposed to be doing? Where am I going with all this, you know? And I have to say, even with your channels open, you know, I'll just speak for myself. We don't always get the answer that we want, because we know the soul has to experience, has to go through that dark night of the soul to awaken to the truth. You know, and I went through that, and I was really, I felt like I was in a dark tunnel. And I didn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I really didn't know, you know. What I do know is that my guides, you know, my guides would always say, you just keep going. You know, we're preparing you for something. Just keep going. We're preparing you for something. And that's all I knew. That's all I knew. And I'll say that, you know, I've tried so hard, banging on my head, you know, trying to find a way to... you know, reboot the project that fell apart, you know, trying to raise the money, trying to make some things work, nothing worked. You know, it felt like I was throwing spaghetti on the wall and to see what sticks, and nothing stuck, right? You know, it wasn't from the lack of trying, you know?
Did you say you were attached? Like, we're looking at these spiritual principles, one of them is non-attachment. And when you're like, okay, if it does or doesn't happen, would you say at that time you were like, I got to get this going? Like, this is going to save me, you know? Exactly. And so, and then when did you finally like let it go?
Well, the letting it go wasn't easy, right? So, because I was so attached, and it's not only just for myself, but I, you know, but also for my accountability to my investors, my accountability to the people I worked with, that I had to let go, you know, because the project was, you know, has fallen apart. So I felt that duty, that sense of duty.
Yeah.
I started all this. I need to clean this up. You know, I need to make it happen. Mm. Right. And you can say that part of it is my own ego, you know, but part of it was also this sense of responsibility that I need to see this through, you know, even though I wasn't the one who, you know, caused it to fall apart. But ultimately it is, right, when it comes down to it.
So how did you clean that up with them? Did you?
I wasn't able to. It just wasn't able to. And it was not meant to be.
Yeah.
And it was a lesson learned from myself and probably, you know, everybody involved, right? For whatever divine purpose it was to serve, right?
Yeah.
So through that dark night of the soul of mine, you know, another level hit me where opportunities just started to close. Not only spaghetti was not sticking on the wall, I wasn't even able to get work in the field of in the film industry.
Wow.
And this is how the universe is like, you know, the writing is on the wall, right? It's like, that's not where you're supposed to go, my dear.
Close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was so painful because I still had to pay my bills.
Yeah.
Right?
So what did you do?
And so I went back to that, you know, where I started, you know, which is where that immigrant story started, where I couldn't find work in my field. And I just had to do whatever work I could find. And that was part of the death of my ego as well. Like, I had to go back there you know, again, and figure it out. Right. So it was as you can imagine, it was agony.
Yeah.
Agony.
Yeah.
Until you know, one day, you know, Dr. Shah called me and said and offered me this role of producing films for him. And actually, I have been working with him off and on, not as a employee, but as a freelance, you know, mm-hmm. producer and his student. And I did work with him off and on, but I never imagined myself working full time in you know, as a spiritual teacher and filmmaker, mm-hmm. you know. Never. I just felt like, oh, this is great. You know, I will do this, you know, with him as a passion project, you know, and then I would go back to my own career. I didn't look at it as
temporary.
Calling. Yeah, not calling. You know, I'm happy to serve my teacher when I'm needed, and then the rest of the time I would be focused on my own, you know, my own career. And then so when the call came, and then like you know, the dark clouds just parted, and I it almost felt like my heaven's guides were like, you know, were, you know, popping the bottle of champagne and I can hear almost hear the heaven's orchestra celebrating the light coming back into my life, you know, and I saw that the light at the end of that tunnel.
And that was when he called you to ask you that? Wow.
Yeah, you know, that day was kind of like, it really felt like the angels were playing the, you know, heaven's trumpets. That's how it felt like to me. Because finally, I know what they were telling me. They were preparing me for something.
Mm.
I just didn't know what it was. And nobody, I asked everybody. I asked, you know, some of the high-level teachers, you know, in the organization who can actually do readings, you know, about your task, about what's in store for you in the future. Nobody could tell anything because they were not supposed to reveal it to me
until
the time was right.
And how many years ago was that?
This is about 8 years ago now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've been working with him ever since?
Yes.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. So it's been a journey, as you can tell. And so when I came into this role, then I really understood that, you know, everything that I went through in my life is actually preparing me for this. It wasn't just that spiritual crisis, you know, every single thing has been preparing me for this kind of work.
Wow.
You know?
All right. On that note, we are going to remember where we are. We're going to go to our commercial break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right.
Amazing.
And I know there's a lot of people with chronic back pain. So why don't you tell them what you did? What did you do to me?
I did not do anything.
No, I know. I'm kidding.
Yeah. So this book, you know, that Hillary just showed everybody, this is the Tao Calligraphy Tao Back Book, okay? And anybody can get this on Amazon. And so I am a healer. I can turn on my Tao hands, you know, the Tao hands that I was talking about earlier, right? And offer healing. But I didn't want to do that because I wanted to empower Hillary to heal herself. So that's why I introduced her to this book, which is perfect for her condition. And so this calligraphy here is called Dao calligraphy. Now, it's Chinese, but it's a very unique form of Chinese calligraphy. Okay, so even I am Chinese myself, and I read and write Chinese. You can't even read these characters because they are very unique. They're called the one stroke calligraphy. It's the one stroke calligraphy, and this one stroke calligraphy has been taught to Dr. Master Sha by his teacher Professor Li, who is the a lineage holder of this calligraphy called one stroke calligraphy. It's called Yi Bi Zi in Chinese. And so Dr. Sha learned this form of calligraphy from Professor Li. And Yi Bi Zi, or this calligraphy on its own, doesn't have any healing capacity, if you will. It's a form of visual art. But after Dr. Sha learned this calligraphy, he asked his teacher, can he turn this into a form of healing art? And with her blessing, he is able to do that. So what he did is, because Dr. Sha himself is a channel, he's a source channel. So that's how he trains his healers, myself included. As healers, he trains us how to channel source frequency vibration into the work that we do as healers. So what he did with this calligraphy is that he channels source frequency vibration into this calligraphy, and then it turns into a healing art. He calls it the transformative art of Dao calligraphy. And the word Dao just means the source, the creator. So it's not about religion. It's not related to, you know, Taoism at all. It's just the word that describes the source, the creator, the universe.
So is he's putting that source frequency vibration into that particular symbol?
Yes.
So no matter where that symbol appears, it's got it.
Yes. Wow. So the reason why it was so powerful, Hillary, is because this calligraphy carries a Dao field, you know?
And the message. I get the book from Amazon, right? I mean, yeah. You know, like, how could that source frequency vibration be in a book from Amazon, right?
Exactly, exactly. And this is why it's so groundbreaking what Dr. Sha is doing. You know, he is creating a new, he calls it Dao technology. It's a technology. You know, it sounds like magic, but it's not. It's real. You know,
right?
It's as real as it can get. You know, when you feel that your back is you know, healed. Because the message is Dao back. So literally, these two words carry the frequency of the creator back. Creator frequency of the back. It's not like my back or your back. It's the Dao back. So it carries that creator's frequencies, you know, to help us heal the back, right? Or realign the back, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, realign whatever that has become misaligned in the field of your back to the field of Dao back, right? So one of the key principles that Dr. Sha's modality operates on is that everyone and everything is made of a field, right? And when I go back to the soul is actually that field. It has a consciousness in it, and it carries all kinds of information, positive, negative, what have you, right? And when you have negative information in your field, you know, something in that field becomes misaligned. So when you have issues with your back, for example, so the back also has a field. If you translate it to a spiritual term, your back has a soul. The back has a consciousness as well. And that consciousness...
Separate from ourselves?
Yes. Every single thing, including our cells, our organs, you know, everyone, everything has a field. So I know science, you know, cannot reckon with this at this point. So all this work that I'm doing, you know, today, I'm making films about this modality, you know, telling stories about how people have healed, you know, using this modality. And one of the passions that I still have, you know, as a LGBT person, queer person, is that 8 years ago, I went back to my LGBT community and started to bring this wisdom that I've learned as a healer back to my community by leading a meditation group for the LGBT Center in Vancouver, you know, and I've been doing this for over 8 years now, and I've met people from all walks of life, you know, and my first session, and I've shared with you before, Hillary, there was a trans man who came, and he came as a refugee, and he was really, really lost. He was kind of like at the place where I was, you know, dark night of a soul, losing hope in life. And when he came to my meditation, he felt love again for the first time.
How do they find you? And do you want to just quickly introduce the video that they're going to watch for the last few minutes?
That's okay. I think I'll just say this. I'm also a podcast host.
Okay.
A podcast host of Queer Love Light. It's a podcast that you know, introduces these self-healing techniques to the LGBT audience. And I also talk about my own experiences. So you can find me there. It's on Spotify and all the major podcast platforms. And you can also reach me at queerlovelight@gmail.com.
Okay.
Great. And if there's time, you know, I'd love you to watch this video that I made to celebrate the Canada's 150th anniversary, which is over 8 years ago now, but it's still a video that's very dear to my heart because it comes with very, very hopeful messages, I think, for the world, especially LGBT people. So thank you so much, Hillary, for having me. It was such a privilege and honor to speak to you, and I'm so happy for your back.
Yeah, thank you so much. Really is a gift. Thank you for your gift. Thank you for what you're doing for the world, and thank you for being here. And now, everyone, you can watch the video.
When I first came to Canada, I thought that it would be hard for me to adapt and adjust to my new environment. Because of Canada's diversity, I don't have to be uncomfortable that I was born and raised from a different country. Canada is a place where they value artists and every talent that a person has, so I can become the artist that I wanted to be in the future. At my young age, I can see my bright future in Canada.
Moving from one colonized country to another, one of the biggest struggles I've had is with the continued emphasis to live within the gender binary. With the passage of Bill C-16, it's really validating to see gender identity and expression being covered within the Canadian Human Rights Act. Thank you, Canada, for recognizing and protecting trans rights.
My parents came to Canada in 1983 from a refugee camp in Thailand after fleeing the Cambodian genocide. Canada was an escape from the violence that comes from a war-torn country, and they raised myself and my siblings in a country with a lot more opportunity. I'm grateful that Canada is a world leader in refugee resettlement, so that relief, that hope, and that ability to live without the fear of violence in a peaceful country is possible for others.
Growing up gay in a different country was hard. Although my family and loved ones accept me for who I am, I still feel like I don't belong somehow. But coming here in Canada, I feel like I belong. I feel like I can be myself and I can be who I want to be. Coming here feels like home. Canada is my home.
In Canada, I can have a dinner with my partner's parents. In Canada, I can hold my partner's hands in public. In Canada, I can say that my partner is a he. In Canada, I can see myself growing old, 30, 40, 50, as a proud queer person. In Canada, I'm grateful.
We are Canada.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary Show on UK Health Radio. If today's conversation resonated with you, take a moment to reflect, share, or simply be with what you heard. Until next time, this is Hillary Burns, inviting you to stay curious, stay connected, and keep getting real.